Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Hello, old dogs, and welcome to
Fun Facts Friday.
This is our once a week, only on Friday show, where we have special episodes not featuring guests, where I will share tricks, tips, terminology, and techniques that will help skyrocket you to real estate investing success. Today's topic is 10 tips for buying rental properties without breaking your budget. But before we get started, hey, I'd just like to touch base with you guys and see how everyone is doing out there. It's warmer weather, definitely over here in Southern California. I'm hoping you have the same, depending on what part of the world you're in. You're enjoying your weather too. Before we get started here, I just wanted to again encourage you and trying to put out some topics there that I think will help all different types of investors, and I'm hoping that this information will be good for you. We've got a good one coming up on Monday about renovating and how to do that cost effectively and strategically. So take a look at that episode coming up on Monday with a good guest. Okay, well, let's jump into our tip of the week here. Calculate your margins. Wall Street firms that buy distressed properties aim for returns of anywhere from 5 to 7% normally, among other expenses they need to pay staff, of course. Well, individuals investing in real estate should set a goal of, I would suggest, at least 8 to 10% minimum return on your real estate investing efforts. Estimate maintenance costs sometimes at around 1% of the property value annually, again, depending on the age of the property. Other costs include homeowners insurance, possible homeowners association fees, which I never recommend you get involved with. HOAs are just like the plague. Avoid them. Anyway, property taxes, monthly expenses, such as pest control, trash service, landscaping, those types of regular maintenance expenses factored in as well. But the idea is, again, calculate within your margins. You want to try to at least have a target that you're going to be aiming for that will be your goal in terms of your return, and then to build everything around that. And make sure you don't forget a lot of those sort of hidden expenses that we don't always calculate. And always, always have a reserve fund. So if you draw from your reserve, you're going to definitely be paying back into that reserve. If you don't have one or you're building one up, then that's got to be factored in as well. Well, let's move on to our topic, 10 tips for buying rental properties without breaking your budget. Well, this is definitely a challenging area here, especially right now. If you're shopping for properties, you'll know that prices are just through the roof. So, trying to save some money here and there, it's difficult. So I thought I'd bring, just some ideas here that you can, things you can do to reduce your expenses. If you want to buy your first rental property, but, aren't sure if you have, the budget for it, or maybe, with the prices going crazy, it might be just deterring a lot of people from investing, and that's understandable. I'm personally kind of holding out a little bit in terms of investing and waiting to see what happens here in terms of things going down, but I know other investors that are investing like crazy and they're doing really well. So it just really depends on your particular philosophical approach to investing, but there are some things you can do to stretch your buying power, and that's what I really want to focus in on. Should you decide to buy, there's other ways to keep your cost down. I think one, you know, you should really concentrate on again, putting your numbers together before you even think of buying a property. Find out what you have available to spend, you know, how much to budget each month, and then, you know, start putting all your numbers together to make sure that property is the right property to buy. One way to save time is to get pre-approval on a loan. Now, I know that pre-approvals don't really mean a heck of a lot, but if you can get in that process, find yourself a good broker. If you're buying commercial property, I would definitely, you know, work with a mortgage broker who has a lot of different lenders to draw from, depending on the type of property you're going to purchase. So if you can get at least started in that process with that broker or that agent, if you're looking for single family homes, for example, you know, make sure you fill out that application, you go through the process of securing financing. That way, when you're ready to seriously evaluate real estate, you'll know exactly how much you can afford, how much your budget will allow. And it can also, you know, give you a little leverage with the seller as well if you are pre-approved. The second thing, explore creative financing options. Now, during the you know, the sort of the loan pre-approval process, ask about ways to get creative with your financing. Now, if you have a potential seller financing opportunity, boy, I would jump on it right now. It'd be fantastic. Also, if you can get low or no down payment options, you know, first or second mortgage combinations and first time buyer programs, those types of things we've talked about on the show before, FHA type loans that sometimes can be either zero down payment or very low down payment. Some lenders may even offer interest only home mortgages, and this may be, you know, okay on a short-term solution. I wouldn't recommend it, especially for old dogs out there. You don't want to get stuck on something that is not cutting down your payments and ultimately reducing your principal. So that, you know, that can be something at least to get you into property, but then I would really seriously plan on refinancing as soon as you can on that. Down payment grants are also available in some instances. You may not have the funds to put down, but you can look, and I'm going to put a link in the show notes today to a couple of podcasts where I've talked about where to get those down payment grants and or those types of loans where you don't have to have a down payment. The third thing, make sure your finances are in order first. This is really key, and know where your purchase funds are coming from in advance. Do you need to borrow for your down payment, maybe from a friend, bank, credit card? Are you setting up a HELOC, for example, line of credit against your equity in your home to purchase that first rental property? Are you tempted to use reserve funds that are designated for emergencies? Now, I don't think you should touch those funds, seriously, unless you have a way you're going to immediately be able to replenish that. If you have funds within an IRA or a 401k plan or a solo 401k or a self-directed IRA, these are great ways to invest. And we've been talking about this in some of our more recent podcasts, which is a great way to get into that first property or, you know, again, to expand your portfolio. Make sure you're ready to move fast if you find the right deal. And that's sort of the key here, is that because it is a seller's market right now, things are going really fast, and you don't want to have to mess with, oh, where am I going to get my funds from? How much is my budget? All that stuff should be taken care of in advance. Okay, let's move on to number four. Look for vacant real estate. Now, again, if this is more geared towards single family homes, but perhaps the seller's job has been transferred, he's been transferred out of town, or she's been transferred out of town, or maybe a family purchased a new home before putting their existing one on the market. In any case, a vacant home could be just the deal for a savvy home buyer. So have your realtor or other team members look for vacant properties in your preferred neighborhoods. And keep in mind, the longer a house stays empty, the greater your negotiating power will be. Number five, consider cosmetic fixers. That's basically a property you're going to buy where you're going to have to put some money into it. And you can get right after the inspection, for example, you can probably reduce the asking price on that property if you're willing to put some, you know, some elbow grease into it and to help fix that up. You know, if you're handy with a paintbrush, a tool set, and gardening equipment, consider buying a real estate that's in need of some fixing up. A property that lacks curb appeal needs minor handiwork or the yard overhauled could end up being the home of your dreams for a price you can afford. You just need to look beyond sort of the ho-hum and see the potential of a cosmetic fixer-upper. Number six, buy a home that's a major remodel project. Now, if you want to live, for example, in Southern California, but can't afford $8 to $2 million mortgage, consider buying a dilapidated cottage or a fabulous lot with western exposure. In time, you'll need to gut the existing home and build from the ground up or contract significant home improvements. Some people also buy properties that have foundation issues. I know that's like, why would I want to buy something with a foundation issue? Well, I know some investors that specialize in foundation issues. That's what they look for. And they actually go through MLSs and do searches for foundation work because a lot of times we think, oh my gosh, that's going to cost so much. And they don't always. And sometimes it's just a matter of knowing the right people that do the right kinds of repairs. You can get some great deals if there's a foundation issue. But in the end, you know, your property value will skyrocket if you can go in there and do that major fix. If your carpentry and other construction skills are well developed, you know, might even save more money if you want to put some sweat equity into it. But you know, most guys, I think at this point, probably would not want to do that. They'd want to be able to fix something that is workable with the right contractor in mind. Number seven, don't discount bank foreclosures. One person's loss could be your gain. Although the search for a decent foreclosure may take a while, especially in today's market, you know, a good realtor or broker should be able to help. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, located at hud.gov on the internet, can be an excellent resource for foreclosed properties. Because HUD houses are sold at market value, your best bet will be homes that need a little bit of fix-up and, you know, some slight repairs there. But bank foreclosures are still out there. In fact, there's a high backlog of foreclosures. So I would recommend doing a search on our website under foreclosures, and you can find out more information about that as well. Number eight, land with a manufactured home. Sometimes to buy a home on a budget, you need to look beyond conventional. Even if your wish is to buy traditional real estate, you may have to settle for maybe a piece of property in an outlying area with a mobile home or manufactured home. I know this doesn't sound real appealing to you, but this is something I saw a lot of when I was recently out in Tennessee and other areas where you have a beautiful piece of land, acres, and it's got this manufactured home on it that actually is a nice home. So there are opportunities there, and you can, especially if you can buy some land, you always have the option of building while you're living in the manufactured home and maybe putting together the custom home, you know, that you really want if you want to live in it yourself, or maybe even put in a, you know, multifamily, a fourplex or something of that nature while you're living in the manufactured home. So that's a strong possibility too. Also, an older, smaller home. Older homes in more rural markets are typically priced much less than newer construction and don't tend to create buyer bidding wars. Now, nowadays, I think you're going to get a bidding war on almost anything, but I still think that there are good opportunities out there if you can find an older home. Again, if you're, you know, in a good zip code or in a good area and it just happens to be a small little cottage, just the land value alone could be worth something. And if, you know, again, you could treat it as a rehab and just keep one wall and build a much bigger home on it if you wanted to make that move too. So, you know, especially, you know, or maybe you might want to keep the smaller, you know, there's a lot of baby boomers out there that are downsizing right now. And you got a cute little cottage somewhere that they don't have to worry about with all the maintenance involved with the larger home. Then, you market it and you present it right. It could be a nice little ticket to a good rental property. Number 10, the final here, the cheapest house in the best neighborhood. That's kind of the thing that you look for in any case. And, it goes for multifamily too. You look for the apartment building in a B neighborhood that looks like it's a C apartment building. You have to, your heart has to be really, focused, and you need to understand the market that you're in and what neighborhood values are and where neighborhoods are going. So you definitely need to know your market in order to do this. But, if you have good schools in that area and all the other right stuff, that can be a real attraction. And if you can find a home like that, sometimes, we do driving for dollars on Google and just kind of go up and down streets that we know are good areas and look for that house that looks like it's, it's kind of older. Now, a lot of times Google photos aren't really updated, but it kind of gives you an idea in an area, and sometimes you can find some things. You can also find folks that will go out there and take pictures of a house that you may find on Google Maps. And then for a small fee, you can find someone to go out there. We've done that kind of thing too in the past, where you can place an ad in Craigslist or locally to get a photographer to go out there and take some pictures for you that are pretty cost effectively. And these are just a few ideas that you might want to consider in terms of, getting that first rental property. If you don't have the funds, there's a lot of different ways to kind of work around that. And we've had a number of podcasts on that. One of my favorite with Brandon from Bigger Pockets. And he, talks about how to get into a property for little or no money down. So there are some great alternatives out there. Yes, things are very competitive in many areas, but there are also areas that aren't as competitive right now too. And you just have to really know your market and know what you're looking for. But I think getting prepared in advance, like we mentioned, making sure you have the budget, get pre-approvals if you can get them, and get all of the things in place that you need to so you can move fast is a key element in today's market. Well, that is it for today. Please note, everything that I talked about today will be outlined in our show notes at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And you're going to look for the episode entitled 10 Tips for Buying Rental Properties Without Breaking Your Budget. Well, remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.